everyone, and welcome back to the 8th episode of the World of Heritage. My name is Niloufar, and here with me is Stephanie. We are students of the World Heritage Studies program at the Brandenburg Technical University. We started this podcast as our study project for this master, querying the narrative course held by our professor, Ms. Caitlin Williams. In each episode, we have a new guest from the BTU Heritage community, and we have the opportunity to talk to another one of our lovely FLOW students today, Roger Negredo.
Hi, good to know I'm lovely. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Roger is a third semester student from Barcelona, Spain. In 2018, he finished his undergrad studies with a bachelor degree in international relations from Ramon Llull University. Already during his undergrad, he fell in love with the idea of working for a United Nations organization and did an internship with the UNESCO department in Beirut, Lebanon, as an intern in project management. He also wrote his bachelor thesis in the area with the name Beyond Iconoclasm, Meanings and Performative Impact Behind the Destruction of Tangible Cultural Heritage. Furthermore, he studied in Rome for one semester as an Erasmus exchange student and gained important international experience. At the BTU, he is a valued member of the Student Council. He also already attended some international conferences in regards to heritage. Hi, Roger. Thanks so much for agreeing to participate in our podcast. We are so happy to have you here with us.
Again, thank you for having me. You made it sound really interesting. I mean, thank you so much.
Now, for the first part, we start with the reasoning why choosing World Heritage Studies. What was your vision before studying international relationship? Why you chose this bachelor?
I would say that since I was a child, I was interested on culture. So it's something that has been around me for quite a long already. I decided to completely change the course of my studies when I chose the bachelor and moved to international relations instead. I have to say that I really love diplomacy and I really love foreign policy, and I learned a lot, and it was really, really interesting for me. I think it opened a lot of doors that I didn't even know that there were. I'm really, really happy that I chose this path. But at some point I realized that I was missing culture somehow. So I really wanted to find a bridge, let's say, and connect both disciplines. When I realized that I may had the opportunity to do some internship inside the curriculum of the bachelor, I decided to go for something that connected both culture and politics, and then find this gap to fill it in with something that was actually from both areas, from the area of foreign policy and from the area of cultural management. And I decided to try to get an internship at UNESCO. I knew that the field offices were the ones people actually work the most. So I didn't want to go to the headquarters and end up doing some bureaucracy and administration paperwork, which it's not the best. And I've been always in love with the Middle East and the Mediterranean since I'm also a child. So I realized that they had this amazing office in Beirut that they were dealing with education in the whole Arab state region. But they also had this amazing project called Emergency Safeguarding of the Syrian Cultural Heritage by the amazing project assistant, Mrs. Cristina Minegazzi. And she basically accepted me to help her on her project and her small team. And it was really, really amazing. And after that, I realized that I wanted to basically further focus on my studies on heritage management. This is why I chose basically this master as well, but also why I wrote the thesis on something related to both, again, foreign policy and cultural heritage, and basically trying to understand what brings a terrorist organization or a non-state armed group to basically destroy heritage in the event of an armed conflict. So I really wanted to understand why, after seeing, for example, the case of Palmyra destroyed by the Islamic State, why this could happen and why heritage was so important that it became something so valued for terrorist groups to destroy. Yeah, that brought me again to this master's. Actually, someone that I used to work with at UNESCO was a member, is actually an alumni from this master. So he told me that he would be, it would be a nice opportunity for me to come here. And then as soon as I got accepted, I quit my job, I left my family, and then I just moved to Berlin instead. And yeah, really happy to be here now.
When did you start finding the heritage sector attractive, and how were you led to write your bachelor thesis in this field?
I mean, I have the feeling that with my thesis, I kind of realized that there was a clear underrepresentation of seeing culture as a proper indicator for human development. I had the feeling that all my studies were really oriented towards understanding how can a society or a civilization basically get proper development through through the economy, through proper legislation, through history, and so on and so forth. But the cultural field was never a big pillar to touch, or at least not as big as the others. So I had the feeling that was, I don't know, I just really got my attention, the fact that I thought that there was it was something underrepresented. So I really wanted to end my thesis on that field. Again, I really wanted to understand what happened, as I just said before, how a terrorist group or a non-state armed group could actually use heritage as a target for the actions, and why a couple of rocks and stones in the middle of a desert, as it would be, for example, Palmyra, like how the ruins of an ancient city could be something so important and so relevant that would actually shake the whole world when we saw it destroyed. You know, it was something that I wasn't really aware of, like how heritage can be so important in that sense. So yeah, I mean, I just started documenting myself about some other cases, about, for example, the Buddhas of Bamiyan in Afghanistan, and how the Taliban destroyed the whole site as basically a political act, or how, for example, in Mali, the shrines of Timbuktu were destroyed because the Islamic branch of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb actually wanted attention from the United Nations and wanted to claim their actual territorial sovereignty on the land. So at the end, I started drawing lines and connecting heritage with politics. And I think that this is what actually motivated me to write the thesis on such a topic at the end, seeing that culture is indeed something super politicized or something political. And if we don't take care of, or at least we don't actually manage properly culture, then this also has an impact on the development of a nation. And the fact that we saw heritage being destroyed in mass media, and we kind of like accepted that it was like, okay, it's fine. It's just, you know, like some old ruins, it's just some rocks and stones. And at the end, I think it was Irina Bokova who said that it's not about rocks and stones, it's about the way we see human civilization moving and developing. And at the end, destroying something that it's our memory, it's our identity, it's our culture, at the end, it has a negative impact on us. Yeah, I just draw the line, I just draw two dots, and it was culture and politics, and I just wanted to understand why and how this could be connected. And I think this is what brought me to write a thesis on that direction.
So we are done with the first part of our interview. We would take a short break and come back in a few seconds. Hi again. Welcome back to the second part of our episode with Roger. Roger, we would like to learn more about your life in Qutbus. What happened after the first semester when we started getting to the pandemic phase of our life in Qutbus?
It was weird. Again, at the beginning, I guess, it was a bit weird for all of us. I happened to be at my partner's place in Berlin, so I got stuck there for the whole pandemic, and we basically stayed together in this tiny room with just one window until almost May, which was at some point rather desperate. Yeah, I missed a lot of stuff, I guess, and just the fact of just being able to go out and see stuff. Hopefully, at the beginning of the pandemic, Berlin didn't have a really, really strong lockdown regulation. So we were able to go to museums. We were able to go to some bars and just like have a takeaway, or even sit in some terraces sometimes. Of course, we were able to go to a park. That is something that I really, really valued after that, because at some point everything was closed. So the only option was to just go and sit in a park, which was super nice in spring and summer. But yeah, I mean, at the beginning was really being super cautious, not taking the S-Bahn at all, not getting into any kind of public transport, avoiding coming to Qutbus, even though I was just paying the rent and everything and the gym and everything here. I remember that once we just walked all the way down from our place in Nolde Platz until the center of Berlin, just because we wanted to go for a walk, but we didn't want to take the S-Bahn, because with the S-Bahn it's usually a max 20-minute ride. It took us almost 5 hours to just go walk and come back. But we just didn't want to take it, you know. It's just we just really panicked and really, really careful at the beginning. I guess at the end things loosened a bit up, and then we just left the whole paranoia, and we realized that we can be cautious at the same time that we actually do stuff. And even though we just, of course, basically cut a lot of our activities and everything, but we still are able to do like some things. So we just got a bit relaxed. But at the beginning it was a mess. So I guess everyone had the same situation, I guess.
So what was your daily life before the pandemic? What did you like to do? Did you like to do sports, or were you having parties every weekend? Or what did you like to do before all this shut down?
I miss sports a lot. I used to do sports almost every day, and it was really nice for me to just hit the gym before going to uni, and sometimes just go for a run after class, or just, I used to swim a lot, like every day before coming to Berlin, and it's something that I really, really miss. I also miss climbing, and like a lot of things that I just, I cannot do now. And of course, social life that I just don't have now. Even though I have to say that since I moved to Berlin, everything has been a bit more relaxed. So I don't have as many crazy plans as I used to have in Barcelona in that sense. So even the first semester, even though everything was open, we just really took it easy as we were in Cottbus. And it was really nice to just go to someone's place and just have a whole big gay parties or just something like that, or just drinking and together in a room. So we didn't party that much, let's say. I mean, we went to a couple of clubs already in Berlin, and it was really nice. But yeah, hopefully and nicely, I didn't have like a huge transition in which where I was partying every day and then I wasn't allowed to do anything. It was kind of like a whole transition in which I got like more relaxed, and then eventually into lockdown. So yeah, I didn't have, you know, like missing syndrome kind of going to a club. But I do really miss sports. In summer, at least, it was nicer because you can at least just go for runs and just go outside. And even though you have like some kind of bars and stuff in the middle of the forest and you can just do your free CrossFit stuff, but now it's just too cold. You cannot even do anything. So everything's canceled, let's say.
What about the accommodation? When you moved to Berlin, to Germany for the first time and in the search for accommodation in Cottbus, was it easy for you to manage it, or it was a big challenge?
It actually took me a while. I was lucky enough because I had, as I said, that place in Berlin where I could stay. But it means that I had to go from Berlin to Cottbus every time I wanted to go to uni. And of course, it wasn't online. And that means I had to pay the train ticket because all the enrollment wasn't online either. So I had to go there and do the paperwork and wait until everything was approved. So it means that I had to go back and forth at least for 3 weeks. I only made it like once a week because it was like 30 euro train ticket for going and coming back, which is ridiculously expensive. And I wasn't really happy having to spend 30 euros every time I wanted to go to a class. So I tried to put everything together. And every time I went to Cottbus, it was just, I woke up super early in the morning, did all the models as possible, deal with everything in the university and everything that I had to do for the registration, visited like 4 or 6 flats, and then left. And then for a whole day, and it was tiring. Took me those 3 weeks to find a flat. The nice thing is that the very same day that I got the approval of the enrollment, so I was able to do the whole train thing for free, was the day I got the approval also for the flat, and I met my flatmates, and I found the flat where I've been staying since, not this October, but the previous one in 2019, November actually, I think it was. So yeah, it was a bit hard at the beginning, but luckily I had a place in Berlin to stay, and at the end, everything worked out, so.
When you think about Cottbus, what is the first thing that pops in your head?
Definitely it would be spring, and then being able to do things in spring. I think it was really nice. Coming from Barcelona, we have a super nice summer, and we have pretty much nicer winter because it's not cold, but then we don't have either spring or fall. So for me, it was a whole new experience to just grab a beer and be able to drink the beer in the park, like surrounded by friends, and just like play games and do stuff in a park. And it was just like super, super nice for me. And I think in Cottbus, I started like understanding the importance of nature into urban areas, because we don't have it in Spain. There's barely parks here in Barcelona, or at least the city where I live. You have a couple of big parks, which are like the two biggest, let's say, greener areas, but they're no bigger than Alexanderplatz, which is pretty depressing. So everything is just really packed and really, yeah, super, super crowded. So for me, Cottbus would be these parks, green areas, having some nature and being able to go for a walk, for a run, just have this mindfulness moment, you know, hug a tree. And every time that I got super stressed with uni or work, I'm able to go for a walk. And then I know I have an amazing park 15, 20 minutes away from my place, and I can just be completely alone in the middle of nature. And it is something that I have never experienced before, and I'm definitely going to miss if I leave. So that for me would be, yeah, the green.
For a person who lived both in Berlin and Cottbus, what would you recommend new students that consider moving to Berlin instead of Cottbus?
I mean, I have to say that Berlin, it's maybe not for me. I'm not, I'd rather actually stay in Cottbus. I don't know. I guess for the issue of the green. Like, now that I got used to nature, I'm just really, really relaxed on the idea of giving up and having to live in a super big city. And the first week I came back here for the Christmas break to Barcelona, it was really, really stressful for me. At some point, it was just like, no, I don't like it. Where are the trees, you know? I guess for Berlin, I would say you have so many kind of like middle class residential areas that are super nice. And then you have like a lot of areas that are not ridiculously expensive and you can pay in an area that is close to the center, but yet super chill and super relaxed. And then everything that I think gets outside a bit of the ring, it's a super nice area to live. So yeah, I would say find a place that is well connected to any train station, because you will need transport in Berlin because it takes you like an hour to go everywhere. So make sure that you're well connected, but also make sure that you can reach the center while living in an area that it's actually relaxed and you're not in the middle of the city, because it gets pretty stressful sometimes.
So we will have a short break and come back in a few seconds. Stay tuned. Hi guys, thanks again for listening. We will commence with the third part of our podcast now. So Raja, what do you like most about the World Heritage Study Program, and what was the biggest challenge of the courses for you?
I would say that for me, the ones I like the most are the red models. So everything related with management and projects. I think that is a must for me in that sense. I mean, I wasn't actually even aware how much I like project management until I took finances, for example. So I think it's what I want to do at the end for a living. So being able to work on projects as the ones that we've been doing in finances are like what I want to see myself and what I want to be doing in the coming future. So I wasn't actually even expecting that I would love them so much. At the beginning, I was really in for the model, like the yellow models ones, because they were the more artsy ones. And I was just like, yeah, architecture and archaeology and, you know, museology and everything. It's nice. But at the end, I think that I pretty much appreciate the red ones, because they gave me a proper knowledge on management that I'm just like, wow, this is the core of what I should be doing. And at the end, it gave me the best base, let's say. Also because we had the amazing opportunity to do them with Rita and Nicole. I'm just talking now about heritage management, finances, and I think legislation, but even though that is a blue one, but it kind of counts as a red for me. So having the chance to have models with Nicole and Rita was such a pleasure. And I mean, they're just brilliant, and they're able to transmit so much knowledge that it was really joyful to be there. And just, you know, I just kind of became a sponge, and I was just trying to soak everything that they could transmit to us. And I think I learned so much, and I'm really, really thankful that I took those ones. So I'm really recommending everyone that hasn't done either both finances, management, or legislation to take them, because they are, for me, a must among all of the courses. I think it's the three we want to compulsory take.
Great advice for first semester students. Roger, in the first semester, did you have opportunity to do excursions? And what was your favorite excursions? And can you estimate how many excursions did you did in 2019 with university?
A lot of them, actually. I mean, I unfortunately didn't take the model of cultural landscapes, and they had this amazing field trip of 3 days, and they went all together to Bavaria, and they saw Neuschwanstein's castle, and it was just super nice. But I wasn't there because I took museology instead. But I don't regret taking museology, because it was at least every other week we had an excursion on Fridays. So with the whole model, I would say that we did, I don't know, 6 to 10 excursions only for museology, and it was really, really interesting. Some of them even to Dresden, some in Berlin, some are on Cottbus as well. So it was really interesting to see different museums and understand different perspectives. But I guess for me, my favorite one will always be the Neues Museum. I just love the architecture of the place. I think David Chipperfield did an amazing reconstruction job for the museum. And I really enjoy just going there to see the building, honestly. Of course, the art is nice. I'm still in favor of repatriating it, but that's another issue. but I think the building is just insane. So I really enjoy it every time I go there. So I think we've done a couple of excursions, or three even, to the Neues Museum in the first semester and even the beginning of the second. And I've enjoyed it every time I'm there. It's like I've been there as well on my own several times. And I think it's an amazing opportunity. The fact that we have such an amazing building in the center of Berlin and is accessible to us, it's just an amazing opportunity. And I think that will always be my top one excursion. And also Potsdam, of course. Potsdam is super nice.
Have you decided about a thesis topic already, as you are a third semester student and you should write your thesis in the fourth semester, or what are your plans?
My plans now currently, I have the feeling that if I want to do a proper thesis and do something that actually contributes to the field and I can end up doing a project that I'm actually proud of, I have the feeling that I need to work a bit on the field. I actually miss it a lot. And I mean, besides what I'm doing part-time, it's nothing related to heritage. So I really, really miss the fact of being involved in something that has to do with culture. So I have the feeling I have to work first. And my idea was to take a leave of absence. I'm just currently looking for internships. I guess with the whole pandemic, it's not an easy task, let's say, to find something nice for these coming months. But still, my idea would be to gain some professional experience on the field of heritage and then be able to understand, on the one hand, like what is missing. So basically being able to analyze the gaps and then basically be able to pull a proper thesis that actually contributes to the field and try to cover one of the knowledge gaps that I have been able to analyze. But on the other hand, also being able to start working on the field, just because I know it's a field I want to work. So just already getting started, because I really have, you know, the urge of start building my career on a field that I love. Even though I have some ideas for thesis topics, I have the feeling that I want to do something more practical. Again, I enjoy it a lot doing project management, and I really have the feeling that it has to do something with proper tangible field work, you know, and something that I actually can have a continuity, and that it's not only adding to the sector, but also creating something nice and something that can contribute to the cultural field and can actually improve the cultural reality of anyone that is enrolled in this project. So I have the feeling that for that, I still have to see what's missing. And after that, I will be able to decide.
Roger, about the study projects, did you already take to write in the second and third semester? Can you name them for us? And what is your opinion about online study project? Do you think it was useful for you? Could you make some new connections and networking there with the people, with the professionals and experts in the field? And do you think it's something that would lead us in the practicing later on?
I guess that would be the most negative critique I have about the whole situation, because I don't have the feeling that I could make the most out of the study projects. I took on the summer semester the 44th committee of the World Heritage, 44th session, sorry, of the World Heritage Committee with both Britt and Nicole. And now I'm taking the making of cultural policy with Professor Bergner. And both of them are really, really amazing. I'm learning a lot in both of them. But again, I have the feeling that I could have gone to China for the committee, you know, and I was stuck because of the pandemic. So I guess it's something that still hurts me, let's say. Hopefully, and thanks to the generosity of Britt and Nicole, I mean, hopefully we could even make it into the next committee, and then they will just take us into account to go as well, because I think it's an amazing opportunity. And at the end, cultural policy is what I love. So I think that I took both models and both the study projects that actually feed me in that sense, in the sense of what I want to do at the end and the curriculum I want to make out of this program. So I would really recommend both of them for someone who's interested in cultural policy as much as I am. But yeah, I guess, again, I don't really think that I'm making out most of the most out of both of them, because while on the first one, I missed the opportunity of actually getting the fieldwork and just being able to see how the committee works in real life, and just being able to be an intern for a while with one of the delegations of attending to the committee and basically seeing how action happens, let's say. On the latter, I'm just basically still trying to understand how we can just pull a conference in the whole online model, and it gets pretty slow to do some things like brainstorming or just putting concepts together, or project management, or just like making group work in online. Well, it would be really nice to be in a class like the 10 of us and just, you know, have a blackboard and start drawing stuff, which I think a lot of both motivation and communication and knowledge is lost because of this whole online thing. So even though I'm not having the best out of it, I think it's still a really nice opportunity for me, and I'm really enjoying and trying to you know, like, make the best out of it, even though that it's not the most likely situation, you know. And at the end, I think both of them are really, really nice, and I would really recommend them, even though it's not the best scenario right now.
So we're already done with our third part, and we have one more question for you, which is, what World Heritage site do you like the most?
Wow. You're making me choose, like, only out of how many? 1,121, I think there's currently. That's a tough question, actually. I, of course, like tangible heritage more than I like intangible, but again, it's every tangible heritage site has an intangible component, so it's not something that I can really take away from one another, let's say. I like cultural more than I like natural, but again, every cultural has a natural aspect and the other way around. So again, I might be biased also saying that I like something out of criteria 6. I think I like this connection of tangible and intangible. And I also like it because it has a really, really political component in that sense. And I really find amazing how countries actually pass the whole political discourse into a heritage nomination and really try to shape the cultural agenda and try to put all the interests of a nation into a nomination, which shouldn't be like that. But I think for me, diplomacy is just fascinating. so I think that the fact that countries have the ability to do that, it's for me just like, wow, okay, they're just corrupting culture in that sense. I don't really know, honestly. I don't know if I'm actually able to pick one. So I think I'm just gonna pick one from my hometown, something that I feel the most attached to, and maybe it would be the Sant Pau Modernist Hospital in Barcelona. I think that's an amazing work of Catalan modernism, which is our regional version of Art Nouveau. And I think that's the finest of Catalan architecture. And I had the pleasure of working there for half a year. And it was just astonishing to just, you know, go outside and see so much beauty. And I think that we just go for that one.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure for us. And thank you for taking your time to meet us online during this time of pandemic. We really enjoy listening to your stories, and I think many people also learned a lot about all these interesting topics that you mentioned. We also wish you all the best for your future studies and master thesis and internships that you are going to attend, and hope to see you soon in the future, this week maybe.
Cool, thank you so much. Hope to see you soon too.
Thanks also to you guys for listening to today's podcast episode. We really enjoyed our interview, and we hope you feel the same way and did learn some new things about another member of the heritage community. As our next guest for the 9th episode of the World of Heritage podcast, we will talk to Tatiana, another student of the World Heritage Study Program. Tatiana is a social communicator and journalist from Bogota, Colombia. She fell in love with intangible heritage when she wrote her bachelor thesis about recording live music and broadcasting it through radio programs or podcasts that focus on storytelling and how they can protect and disseminate intangible heritage. By the way, did you already listen to the other podcasts we published? If not, you definitely need to do so. For also keeping up to date with our project, you can follow us on Instagram. Our name on social media is The World of Heritage. We would also appreciate your feedback. If you're interested in sharing your story on our podcast, feel free to contact us. You can find our email address in the description box. Thanks again for listening, and stay safe. Bye.